Welcome to the King's Road Podcast. I am your host, the Aries Justin Yance, and I'm here with
City Scent. What's up?
Nothing much. And we're talking Sting again. And where we just left off, we talked about Uncensored 1997, and now we are at 317 1997. And can I just say that Lex Luger's promo where he has said, I believe in the Easter Bunny. I believe in Santa Claus. Who told him to say that? That was the worst promo I think I've ever
heard. Do you think anybody told him? Because I totally feel like that only he could think of a promo that stupid. What's his name? Sid Vicious, maybe. Sid. But that's about it.
They got Giant there. He got Sting. I'm like, oh my God.
Look, man, everything about Lex Luger is negative charisma.
But even the Giant, he sucked too.
Like, I mean, let's be honest. If we're completely honest here, I mean, the Giant. To me, the Giant was only good for a small portion of WCW. Like,
yeah.
Like, what he beat Hogan, right?
Yeah, his first match.
And then he never was any more over than that match. Like, to me, he was the biggest, like, he was his biggest star literally after his first match. And he never got back to that.
Yeah.
Yeah, you know, like, how did he lose the title again? It doesn't matter. It really doesn't.
It was something stupid. But anyways, yeah. So, yeah, Giants there. My problem is they shouldn't be talking about Sting at all. They make him less cool the more they talk about him. I'm like, I don't want anyone to think, like, he's on these losers' sides. I mean, they just came up like such dorks.
You know what it is? The problem is, it's Lex Luger. If you had somebody good, they could cut a hell of a sympathetic promo. Like, imagine if Cody, because he's really good at babyface sympathetic promo, and he's like, I'm sorry I let you down, Sting. You know, I'm sorry I betrayed you. I should have known better. And not talk about the fucking Easter Bunny and all this crap and the Tooth Fairy and all this bullshit.
Yeah. I mean, he did when he there was a promo he
Nothing
did a little while
Lex Luger ago. Does is good. Don't convince me otherwise.
Okay. All right. So let's get to when Sting. So Sting drops down from the rafters.
He's good at using a wheelchair.
And he and he points a bat at
We're
Hogan.
Not
and
editing
Hogan,
that out either.
Not, well, I can't edit it out. You made it so I can't edit it out. I have to cut the whole thing out. All right. So anyways, so Sting drops down, and this is when he does the infamous pointing of the bat at Hogan. And Hogan goes, he's pointing at me. He's pointing at me.
You know, like, I like to, like, attack Hogan and, like, the way his promo delivery is, like, it's very dramatic, it's very over the top, it's too much, too often, but, like, there are certain occasions where, like, remember when Andre Giant, like, takes his chains and throws it in the ground,
yeah,
and he does the dramatic look, like, these are where he really shines. Like, the fact that he's, like, screaming out, he's pointing at me, you can clearly hear it. Especially back then, that was very hard to do. It was very hard to hear the wrestlers talk unless they were on the microphone. Like, full on the microphone, because the crowds were so loud. Like, outside of announcers, and when guys would really be yelling the way Hogan was yelling here, you wouldn't hear it. So, like, the dramatics of it really worked well. Especially because he seems like such a coward to Sting.
Yeah.
Despite having, like, a group of, like, 20, 30 people with him.
Yeah. But he's pointing a bat at him. So, he's very scared.
And it was great. Like, man, that's one of the images that I think of WCW.
He's pointing at me! He's pointing at me!
I don't even think about, like, Hogan. I think of Sting's, like, my vision always goes to Sting pointing at him, and you're looking at Sting as he's pointing at him with no emotion, yet the eyes are fierce. And you hear Hogan saying he's pointing at me without looking at him.
The way Sting is pointing at him, he's just got that stoic look that only he can do at this time.
The I'm about to fuck you up look.
Yeah, but it's not like there's no... It's very similar to like the look the Teen 1000 gives in Terminator 2. That just like it's merciless, but there's no hint of like any emotion there.
You know, see, just... I see it a little differently.
Yeah.
This is how I see it, because I'm a more vengeful and pettier person than you.
Really?
So I see it differently. I saw it as very emotional and very like, man, words can't describe how bad I want to whoop your ass.
Really?
But I'm not going to whoop your ass right now. No, no, no. I want you to see me point this bat at you. I want you to go to sleep and in your fucking dreams become nightmares and you see me with the bat pointing at your ass. Because when I get you, I'm not going to do it right now. No, no. I'm going to wait till the very end of the year so I can savor the whole year of me terrorizing your fucking ass.
You think that's what Steve Gordon's thinking?
You know what I count it to?
What?
You ever seen The Count of Monte Cristo?
Yeah.
You know that point of realization where, what's his name? The evil motherfucker. What the actor's name?
Guy Pearce?
Guy Pearce. When Guy Pearce has the realization of that this guy is who he is, that he's not the Count of Monte Cristo, when he has that point of realization. You have this long stare with the guy. It's like, normally, you know, you would figure, man, this guy has been like tortured for decades. You would think his reaction would be visceral. Like the second he sees him, he would kill him. And it's like, no, when you pass a certain level of hatred, Hogan turned the entire promotion against him, you know? He is seeing this like the Count of Monte Cristo. I'm not just gonna like kill you now. I'm not gonna beat you up now. No, 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 no. It's gonna be a lot longer than that. You know, there's a lot more mind games to be played, and there's much more beating of bats that need to be done.
Hmm. Interesting. All right, that's all right. That's cool, yeah. All right, so the next week he's not really on. They just show a video package of him. And yeah, it's just basically, I don't know. It's a pretty good video package, but it's not.
It sucked. I remember being disappointed this thing wasn't on. That's what I remember. I was like, this is what we got. And I think they promoted Sting too. Like they were like, Sting. And then they show a fucking video. And I'm like, there's no Sting.
Well, it wasn't as bad as like a couple of months ago when they showed we need a hero. I was like, who thought this was a song?
No, that was terrible.
That was horrible. I was like, I'm like, that is not Sting. That's not cool. That is not even, he's never going to use that music.
You know what reminded me of when Shawn Michaels left and the music they used?
Tell me a lie.
It's like when a song doesn't go with the video at all, it just doesn't make sense.
Tell me a lie. All right. Then the next week he's not on again and we get a Sting. Well, we get a Sting commercial for the shirt. The Scorpion shirt, which is cool to watch.
So you could be a part of the biggest mystery in professional wrestling. That commercial was so ingrained cool. in my head. I remember that shit so well. Because honestly, in that time period, like those are the things you see the most.
Yeah. The commercial. I remember going with my friend to like one of those like places. I think it was called Zones. I don't know if you had that in New York.
I lived in Florida.
It was like a play. Well, it actually probably was in Florida. I remember they sponsored one of WWF's.
There was a lot of WCW shit in Florida, to be honest. In fact, I would go on to say, like, it was that like, I think we talked about it earlier with the Austin stuff. It was so hard to get WWF shit, but like Hogan, NWO, Sting stuff. And that's another reason why I love Sting too, because his shit was actually easy. Like, you can find Sting shit in the mall. You could not find WWF shit till
like 98. It was the carts would have them. Yeah, I remember.
Yeah, yeah. But like before that, it was tough. It was tough.
No, it was. Yeah, like it wasn't.
Especially if you're in the South. See, that's the thing. I didn't live in New York. Yeah. So I would imagine if I lived in New York, WCW shit would have been impossible.
You wouldn't have had the malls. Like people don't realize that back in the day, like 98, 97, the malls actually had wrestling shirts. Like, they had like a little cart and they had all the shirts.
Back in 95 and 96 and 97, there were malls. Are there even still malls now? Like, really malls?
They kind of exist. There's still Mall of America. This Mall of America. I mean, that's still alive.
That doesn't really count. Like, it's alive because it's not really a mall. It's not it's Mall of America. Like, nobody says the mall with Mall of America. You actually say the whole thing.
The Mall of America. Yeah. But anyways, I remember going to like one of those zones places, like a play place. And I went with my friend and we painted our face white with the black streaks. And every like mother thought we were like Marilyn Manson.
I went to Zone for a field trip. I went for a field trip. That's the only way I really went anywhere but the mall back then.
Yeah. The mall.
The fucking mall.
The fucking mall. Hey, I have fond memories of the mall. So, all right. So then the next week, now we're in 4/7/1997. Sting drops down. And he throws a bat to DDP, and they both have bats in the ring and are holding off the NWO.
A fan perception standpoint at this time, I also started to feel like DDP was a star in this era. Not like right here, but like in this era, because it really did feel like, okay, you had Sting, and right below him, I felt it DDP. Was DDP. Well, he beat Macho was the only Man. One that got any offense on the NWO.
He beat Macho Man at the Spring Stampede. Yeah. At a time when nobody thought he was going to get that win, and he got to beat him clean. I have shows like
Macho. I mean, that made him a star. That made him really a star. Did.
You that know? The you know, shirt saying shit. Saying no, yeah, saying no to the
shirt
NWO.
Shit, yeah,
yeah.
Yo, the diamond cut, that was a big pop though. Like
that was a cool move.
You know, like
that diamond cutter shirt with them like that Jay-Z took.
Oh yeah, that was a cool shirt.
That was the coolest shirt. Everybody wanted that. That was a cool shirt. I mean, people forget that when they try to relive the money. But I'm like, that was a shirt. That was a shirt, but like
it was a shirt, but it wasn't the shirt. And
no, it wasn't
really
Austin 360.
When you talk of history, typically second place doesn't get spoken about.
Yeah. But that was a shirt that you saw people wearing it.
Well, I had it. I had it.
It was a cool
like
shirt.
I had Sting, DDP, and Harlem Heat, because I was born in Harlem. So I wanted the Harlem Heat shirt. You know, the only time I ever had Booker T merchandise.
Do you still have it?
What the fuck? I don't got anything from that era. Man, so those shirts must be worth money though.
I think I got some. Yeah, I got. So when Sting drops down, he actually drops down in the aisle this time. Which I always thought was kind of cool. He would drop down like
random spots.
You didn't know where he was always different. Down. Yeah. Like if this was WWE, he would always drop down at the exact same fucking spot and it would suck.
That's what I love. Every time he dropped down, it was in a different place. So like if you're like thinking wrestling is real, like I did, you're like, this is how you know it's yeah. not fake, because he's trying to trick the NWO, so he always goes in a different position. Like, yeah. you remember, well, like, when the dummy dropped?
It made sense logically, you know? That
you saw when the dummy dropped? I've got a question to you. So, like, when the dummy dropped the second time, me and my whole school were, like, we did not think Sting was going to come out of that. Like, I think that was one of the biggest surprises for me in wrestling in that time period.
The we're not at that point yet.
I know,
but I know what you're talking about. Yeah. I mean, yeah, they did some stuff that was like, I could never see them doing that.
See, here's the thing, though. But WCW did some of the stupidest shit. It's like, it's so uncharacteristic how subtle and how intelligent the booking was just for Sting, because let's be honest, it wasn't like the booking was great everywhere else. Just Sting.
Yeah.
But that's so all that matters. Rare. It's so rare in wrestling for you to get a perfectly booked angle. And until the very end, it was perfectly booked. Like, man, I just look at it and I'm like, man. And I'm watching it now and I'm like, damn, man, I remember being so fooled as a kid. I was 100% convinced they were doing the same shit they did the week before. I was convinced that was it. Yeah. And then I look at Sting like...
They came up with such clever ideas. We're going to get to that. All right, so the next week, 4/14/1997, Sting comes out and he throws the three bats to Luger, Giant, and DDP. They all have bats.
See, I'm gonna pause you there for a second. You know what I think is missing in babyfaces now? Miss when babyfaces outsmarted heels.
I know.
Heels are always smarter. That's what I'm talking about when I brought that other point up. And this is another one. Yeah. He gives all these guys the bats. So the NWO closes in thinking, oh, he doesn't have a bat. And then he pops out the bat in the last second. He constantly got one over on the heel every single time he outsmarted them.
Well, that's why the NWO was able to last as long as it did, because it's like, okay, they were winning all of their matches, but when they came against Sting, they weren't able to.
They never won anything.
Beat him. Yeah.
It's like Austin and Vince.
Yeah.
You know, like Austin always outsmarted Vince. Vince never stole for anybody but like Undertaker and Kane.
Yeah.
And made everybody else look bad, but made Austin look like $1 million. Yeah. The babyface has to outsmart the heels. Like if you have everybody be the NWO, then it doesn't work.
Yeah. Well, the problem is they don't have any baby faces. I mean, other than Brock. Brock's the only babyface.
No. It's their own fault.
Yeah.
Okay. It is. Their baby faces always look stupid. They always look not just stupid to the point that no one can cheer for them. Cause you're like, he's an idiot. He deserves this.
Yeah.
Give
him an example of a stupid baby face. Just you know, for the listeners.
Fuck. Oh. Damn, because now I have to remember wrestling in the last year. And that has always become
Big E. How about 2 years ago, Drew McIntyre in the ring with Roman. He says, you know, you're my favorite number two. And he doesn't hit the guy. He just stands there, just sits there signing.
Man, there's so many more worse examples than that, though. Like, how many times have we seen the heel beat a baby face and a 2-on-1 advantage?
Yeah.
How does that work?
Yeah, that's a good point. Well, they did that with Brock against his kid and Rey Mysterio. I mean, that made him look like such a douche. I mean, he just loses.
Yeah, like I wish that I could remember the stupid shit.
No, you don't. Because
comes in together. But I've seen the baby face
distracted by music.
The baby face acts like a heel more than the heels do. You know, sometimes, you know, what made a heel back then? Stupid. If the heel was like, people that were stupid were heels. People that were smart were baby faces.
Yeah.
That's how it worked. The baby face always outsmarted the heels. Yeah, you have one or two, and that's it. Where that's their gimmick, like Triple H, where his gimmick is that he outsmarts everybody. And that's fine if you have one guy. Yeah, and it works if you have only one guy that does that. But when you have every heel do that,
yeah,
it don't work.
Yeah, it's unfortunate. All right, so.
You said Roman, your favorite number two. There was not one person in that arena that didn't believe Roman Reigns when he
said. I know, but my point is
that he was supposed to lie.
Yeah, but he should have, you know, when he said that, he should have like struck him.
Yeah. No, because that's a dynamic. Even if he says, "Oh, you're lying," or says anything back to that, it's the truth. You're already looking bad because you're trying to come back the truth. The fact is, there was not one person in that crowd that did not believe Roman Reigns when he said that. And a heel is not supposed to say the truth.
So it brings up a good point. Why are you even having it said? Unless you want to bury the baby face on purpose.
They do. They always do. It's what they love doing. It's why Sting was over, because they did that to everybody but him. Yeah.
All right, so here we go. Now we're at 5/12/1997. So 4/14/1990. So for a whole month, we don't see Sting. Sting doesn't come back till May. And this is where Eric Bischoff is in the ring with the fake Sting. And fake Sting comes out. You
gotta remember that was kind of common. Not common that it's Sting, but like stars not coming in for like weeks at a time, like Hogan would miss time all the time. You know, and to be honest, that's a good strategy to maintain your relevancy. You shouldn't show up all the time.
Yeah.
Unless you're Stone Cold and you're so fucking over that there's no lessening, you know, like it's.
But
just
I mean, if you were one of the Nitros that didn't have that, I think you were probably.
Oh man, that's brutal.
You would be very disappointed going to that show and be like,
if I'm watching a Nitro and I don't got Sting in '97, I'm skipping.
All right, so Sting. So this is the fake Sting comes out to the ring to a man called Sting, which was hilarious. That like they were actually implying that the fake Sting would that the real Sting would actually come back out to that song. Like that song is dead. He can never go back to that song. It's that's not the character anymore. But while he's doing it, Bischoff's talking, and he def drops fake Sting. And I like how they, you know, Eric Bischoff runs off. It's not like in, you know, all these other companies where they're like, there's a magic force field keeping them in the ring. Oh no. You know, no, he ran away. And that, you know, that comes to the next.
They were good at that at the time, reality.
Yeah. Unfortunately, they lost that.
They should have hired Cody.
Oh, Jesus Christ. Dude, they're going to fucking fuck that up so bad, and you know it.
Okay, but it all didn't matter. Okay, do you believe if he goes back to AEW, he will have any angle that will be as hot as his first WWE angle?
No, probably not. But
then he should do it.
Watch Vince be like, you know what? I see you as Stardust.
You know what he needs to do?
Stardust.
You remember the Bucks were talking about that initially. WWE offered them a deal that if they don't like the way they're booked for the first 6 months, opt out of their deal. He should do that deal.
Yeah, everyone should fucking do that. He should do that.
Yes, but they don't have leverage like he does.
Yeah, he should do that.
He has leverage. Okay, so he should use it. I say this all the time. Wrestlers need to learn how to fucking use leverage, because it seems like none of them do.
No,
Kevin Owens should not be making more money than Becky Lynch.
I know.
Okay, the women that are feminist and shit, get on that. That's
there
what you
go.
Get on that one.
Yeah, me
that
too.
That one's a legitimate fucking gripe.
Yeah, Me Too movement. Go after that.
Yeah,
There you go.
That's worth it.
Go to Twitter on that one, please. This is one we want you to listen. Go.
I want to know what metric is Kevin Owens a bigger star than Becky in any? Yeah. Any. Find
exactly.
Me one metric.
Bring it up.
Weight. That's the only metric. Weight. Yeah. Pounds. That's the only metric that Kevin Owens beats Becky Lynch in.
But don't you think that Vince is probably his man? Like,
you know what? I've seen Becky do a stunner. She does it better.
I know.
She does it better than him.
Could you see Vince suggesting Stardust to Cody?
No.
You don't think
he's getting... Because, yes, Vince is bad at keeping with storyline. If there is one thing he is good at, is war moves. This is something that AEW still doesn't understand. This is a war move, which is why you shouldn't have allowed it to happen. This is a war move. I truly believe Vince is not going to bury him because he can't if he plans on ever getting anybody else. I know you think they're too arrogant, and I agree. They do think they're arrogant. But to be honest, they have treated certain guys a lot better with the threat of AEW that they normally didn't. I'm not saying much better, but better.
Yeah.
Kevin Owens is definitely elevated. Not much, but he's elevated.
Yeah.
You know?
All right, now let's get to the probably one of the best Sting moments ever. We're talking 5/19/1997. Bischoff's in the ring. He says, yeah, we looked up. We've searched all around the building. We don't know. And then he goes, I would slap the paint right off of his. And like, as soon as he says it, he just pops up out of the ring, comes out like Batman.
Everything about him is like
Batman.
Better
than Undertaker. How about
way
that?
Better than Undertaker. Way better. The Undertaker got
head,
it from him.
Pulls
That's
his
how
head
I
back.
Felt. To pulls me, his- did they... Here's a question. Did they ever do none of this stuff with Undertaker before?
Yeah, they did. They did do that. Remember WrestleMania 12? This is 96. He popped out
didn't
of the
it
ring.
Didn't it take
a
million years to fucking get Undertaker like in the Probably. Ring after they turned the lights off or something? Because they used to take mad long.
I don't remember. All I know is Sting did it much better. And it was the end of the show. They could do it. So one of the things is before Sting hits him, though, a fan throws a whole bucket of popcorn and it hits Bischoff right in the fucking face. And he's actually affected by it. It's hilarious. Like he stops. He's doing it's great.
But I'm going to be honest. I think Eric Bischoff is so brilliant as a heel.
Yeah, he's great.
Like so brilliant.
They missed the boat on him.
He was the first. He was the first.
He should have been the guy that invaded. He should have been the first invader.
Of course. It shouldn't have been anybody else. It shouldn't have been anybody else.
That would have been so great if he showed up on that, first, just shows up on Raw.
Without Eric Bischoff, you can't make that invasion work.
And they could have done it. I'm sorry. I blame Jim Ross.
I agree with Meltzer. If you have Eric Bischoff, Ric Flair, and Goldberg, you don't need anybody else.
Yeah.
You don't need anybody else.
Yeah, they could have done that. Yeah. But anyways, so Sting drops him, and I love the way we've talked about it over and over again, but I just love the way he does
some money in
pulls the head back so that he can look down at him before he kills him. It's little things like that.
You know
that
what I love is amazing. I love how Eric Bischoff is like completely cowering and flailing as he's holding him. Like it makes Sting look so powerful. Like he's flailing. He still has him like gripped.
Yeah, I'm looking at it right there.
My
so
favorite
cool.
part though isn't that. It's when he puts them like the Hogan shirt, like the Hogan shit in his mouth.
Yeah, but that's another show. We're not at that show. All right. One thing, I've been reading some of the comments on YouTube, and here's what somebody says about it. This is actually interesting. This guy is Christopher Thomas, and he says a little story about that night, what it means to me. I was ringside that night with my grandfather. I was about 12 years old and going through a very hard time in my life. My home was a nightmare and abusive. And on top of that, my family didn't have much money at all. I had a friend whose dad made good money and they would pick on me a lot and they were going that night. So they took the opportunity to rub it in my face. Now, two things in my childhood were an escape for me. One was a kiss. And the other was, one was Kiss. Oh, the band. He was talking about a fucking, I think he meant a chick. And the other was Sting. So after hearing how my friend had rubbed it in my face that he was going and had good seats, my grandparents were like, where is he going to sit? And I told them, and they said, well, son, you're going to sit closer. And they paid money for them to go. So the night comes and I have my, the kid has his face painted and his Sting shirt on, and had the best part of my life was that my grandfather was there with me. But then he says, I'll never forget the feeling when Sting pops up, pure happiness and joy. And right then a memory was made that changed my relationship with my grandfather for the rest of our lives. So thank you to, he thanks his grandparents. And then he says, there's only a few. So, but the point I'm reading this story is that a moment like that can affect somebody that powerfully. Do you think anything that has happened the last 12 Raws has done that for anyone?
I haven't watched a Raw, so I know
exactly. So there you go. The point is,
like, maybe. Here's the thing, like, the way I think is so different from the way other people think. Like, listening to people talk about how meaningful Kofi Kingston and Big E's title win were, like, there's a disconnect with me.
Kofi, I get, because that was WrestleMania. Big E just felt like, I mean, the moment was nice when he got it.
I
thought it was much cooler when Lashley won it. If we're talking about when he destroyed Miz, I thought that was. I thought he should have gone as babyface from there on. As he was like, the way he killed him, I was like, yeah.
My point is, you have people that see things differently than us. You know, like, you'll talk to people that'll tell you the Miz is like this legendary wrestler that like changed everything in wrestling. Like, you'll hear these kind of arguments. So I can't, like, I'm not gonna waste my time arguing with that kind of person.
The Miz. That great.
Like, I was arguing with somebody over the fact that I don't think the Miz is a Hall of Famer.
I agree.
I mean, he's a WWE Hall of Famer.
Yeah, who gives a shit?
Or that Hall of Fame, a Hall of Fame that don't matter.
A Hall of Fame, I mean, where you could be a
the only driver. Hall of Fame that has less respect for me than the WWE Hall of Fame is the Baseball Hall.
I knew you were gonna say it. I knew you were gonna say that.
You know, the only other Hall of Fame that's even worse, you know, like, at least they got Bruno Sammartino in. That's the only thing that I'll give him credit. That's it. Outside of that, it's a joke. Coco, beware. fuck out of here.
But anyways, I think the 5/19/1997, when Sting comes out of that ring, it's actually happened in Nashville, North Carolina. I think that's one of the best moments, because I don't think anyone saw that coming at the time.
No.
Because he was dropping down from the ceiling. And but for him to come out. And
what I liked, it was different. Everything was different. If he came from the ring one angle, he'll come from the ring in another angle. Like, it was never always one way. So you couldn't always predict, because people used to think about that when it came to wrestling angles, how to make sure that people don't know what's coming up the next week. Like, now it's beyond not even thinking about it. It's almost ensuring that it happens the same way, the same spot, in the same position, in the same camera angle every fucking time.
Yeah. Usually wrestlers come out to the exact same camera angle.
Somebody's doing a surprise entrance, because they'll do the wide shot to the entrance.
Yeah, they will. Yeah. I know. Instead of just shooting it from the hard camera and then having them like come right in, like they would do in. I mean, Well, I kind of like the way when Roman came in, because they did have it just on.
Oh,
the
yeah,
camera.
Yeah. Okay, one time.
Yeah, but that's like about it.
20 yeah. something years. Yeah. Yes, I get it. Everything Roman does is good.
That's because they're scared of Roman. Yeah.
I bet they wouldn't. You know what? You know who I think has gained the most power in WWE since AEW? Roman mm-hmm. and Brock.
Yeah.
Because I feel like they're the only ones smart enough to really say to a guy like Vince, is like, I don't know, man. Moxley? Oh, man. Yeah. I don't know, like, this Moxley guy, man, he keeps telling me that, Matt, that AEW.
You heard what Meltzer said. He said, well, you know, Brock and Roman can pretty much do whatever they want. they don't have to lose the belt. And I was like, that's something we haven't had. Like, usually Vince would, you know, make you drop the belt. Now it's at a point where, like, no, you don't want to drop it.
To be honest, he shouldn't.
No, we shouldn't. Why? But Vince would play those games because he never wanted anyone.
Let's be completely honest here, Justin. He didn't lose the title because they wanted him to break CM Punk's record. Let's be completely honest. They want to make
yeah,
sure
that's a good point.
That like now Punk is like what, third? They're gonna give somebody else a different reign so that he's off the top five. Or top three, whatever it is.
I mean, they pretty
it's
much.
It's who they are. You're talking about, they gave the title to Randy Orton so that he broke Brock Lesnar's record because they were mad at Brock. Stupid. It's what they do. It's what yeah. they do.
All right. So now we're at May 26, 1997. Bischoff and Hogan are in the ring. This is like, I think it's like the anniversary show or something. No, it's not the anniversary show, but Bischoff and Hogan are sitting in the ring. This is when Hogan's got like, it almost looks like he's got a painted on mustache. It's so, because he doesn't have the Fu Manchu on it.
Yeah. But I hated it.
Sting rebels from the, and he death drops, you know, Bischoff again. And you can hear Heenan going, get Hogan, get Hogan, get him. But they didn't.
I got to say.
He didn't lay out Hogan yet. They only had
I
him.
I love
lay out
Bobby
Hogan
Heenan's commentary because yeah. he would always give you little lines here, like of what's really important. He always knew exactly what was important. I always go back to when Goldberg lost and he says, well, that's it for this. We're done.
But he didn't say it on the actual commentary. He did it like, you know, when they were off the air. Yeah. You know, if he said it on the actual commentary, well, that's it. The company's dead. That would have been interesting. The cool thing that happens here, though, is after, you know, because Hogan, you know, he trips Hogan, you know, he falls over the fake Sting, and then Sting lays out the other fake Sting as well. But then all the whole NWO surround him. He brings the thing down and he rappels up this time with the bat, you know?
Yeah, like Batman.
Yes, like Batman. But he had the bat in his hand, which was pretty cool when he did that. All right, so now we're at 6-9, 1997, and this is Boston. This shows you how far WCW had gotten, because Boston, that's WWF's stomping grounds, and they sold out the Fleet Center on this night. And
they could have sold out Madison Square Garden at this point.
Yeah, but they couldn't get. But like, this was the first time like they actually went into their backyard and like just obliterated them, sold out. Like that had to stick in Vince's, and even Nash has talked about that. You know, we went into Boston and we outsold them. But the cool thing here is this is when Sting.
Do you think Vince cares that the AEW outsold them in New York?
Yeah, I do. I think he's betting and he does care about that shit.
That Cody did it.
Yeah, that's probably how he's going to justify. Well, I took Cody away, so they'll never do it again. I've taken care of it.
It's pretty concerning that the first week he's not there, their ratings fucking tank.
Also has a lot to do with, you know, the Olympics and shit.
Wasn't the Olympics on last week?
Yeah, it was. Okay, Cody wasn't even on the show either. Cody wasn't on the show.
What about the show before that?
Actually, I think the show before that. Actually, was it that show or was it the show before that?
Whatever match had the ladder match.
Yeah. I don't remember. I'd have to go through all the dates and shit. And
like, I don't pay attention to the dates. Are we really acting here like it matters?
All right. But anyways, so Sting takes DDP's down, and this is where he repulls up with DDP.
I thought that was mad cool at the time.
That was pretty cool.
He comes in, saves DDP, and then he just brings him in like Robin. DDP felt like Robin at this point.
He did.
You know, it wasn't lame like when Macho Man was with Sting. That just felt like wrong. Yeah. It didn't feel good. I thought it looked stupid.
Macho
Man looked like a jobber.
But it all led to, you know,
making whether Macho Sting Man was look gonna, like a jobber.
Whether Sting was in the NWO, that was the whole point.
Yeah,
of
I get it. So it just made Macho Man look like a jobber.
I mean, kind of at that point was.
Everybody that wasn't Hogan was a jobber.
He already had lost at Halloween Havoc, you know, to Hogan. That was when Hogan wore a fucking toupee.
Scott Hall was like the only dude that really could always protect himself, despite the fact that he lose a lot. Like, because he was just so cool that it didn't matter.
Yeah. I love the fact that when he was coming up with, like, the, you know, the Razor Ramon character, Vince had never seen Scarface. He had no idea what he was doing.
Not surprised.
It just says how like out of touch he is.
I don't think Scarface. He discovered Game of Thrones till like 2014 or whenever he thought of the gimmick for whenever they made the Pac have like Jon Snow's gimmick or something. Like,
oh yeah, the bat. Oh yeah,
he had kind of yeah, the bass or whatever. When he had that gimmick, you know, it was a Game of Thrones gimmick.
Yeah,
the King of the Cruiserweights. They were trying to do the King of the North shit, you know. Yeah.
Except it was lying.
I bet it was the first time he ever heard the name Game of Thrones, and it's like, what? Let me see an episode. It's like, what? People talk like this all the time. We must have somebody that touches this.
You mean like when they have Paul? When they have Paul Burchill, have you ever heard
you know who's lucky that Drew McIntyre wasn't like in the position he is now? Because if he was in the position he is now back then, they would have made him the king of whatever, the king of Scotland. He would have had a horse come out with the sword and shit. Like, he's lucky he was a fucking 3MB guy. He was so low, he was beneath even that back then.
3MB. I can't believe you mentioned 3MB.
I mean, look at Cody. He was Stardust.
Oh god.
He got Triple H fired. He went from Stardust to getting Triple H fired and having a heart attack. That tells you everything.
All right, now we're at now we're at 6/23/1997. Sting scares Hall and Nash, and DDP once again is saved. This is the second week in a row. This was kind of lame. This was not one of my favorite things. 6/30/1997. This is Sting shows up. This is where the multiple Stings show up in the crowd. And Chono was so actually... Cool. And Chono's actually out there. Kurt Hennig shows up. Raven shows up. This is in Las Vegas. They're in the MGM Grand. And Sting comes down and once again saves DDP. Basically, in June of 1997, Sting saved DDP three times.
I mean, that's fine. I mean, yeah. Like, what do you prefer DDP to save him? That's what
Yeah, I don't know.
Steven saving.
It's getting a little long in the tooth. All right, anything else to say about these 10?
I think they should have had, like, maybe save Kimberly Page or some shit. I don't know. Was Kimberly even a part of the picture back then?
Like, oh, yeah, because they did the angle with the, that's the whole thing that led to Macho Man and DDP was Macho Man showing his wife in Playboy.
Who, Kimberly? Have him save Kimberly. Done it. Have him save a baby. That'd be really cool.
Save a baby.
The NWO wants to kill him.
That now you're going into stiff. That's stupid as shit.
I went full baby. Russo there. Full Russo.
I could see Russo. Yeah, Russo would be like, yeah, all right, we're going to have a baby carriage in there. And
I went full Russo.
We're going to have, and then it'll say at the bottom, heat. Don't worry, Abyss, the blank will have you.
Yeah, I don't know why I found that line so funny when Cornette's like pauses and says heat. Like, it's, I don't know why
it's written in there.
It's just, I know, but it's like, it's how he delivers it. Like, I don't know. It's just, it's so hilarious. He's like, heat.
I want him to read more of the
Bro. Like, I want him to just read Russo shit.
Yeah, that's what I want to heat. I just love the fact that he's saying, "I'm sorry, this you can't move because the blank has taken effect." The blank. Like, how bad is that? I've read some bad scripts, but reading that, I'd be like, I would just be like, I can't do this,
bro.
Quit.
Have you done a 7 million rating, bro?
Oh yeah,
I've been a part of some of the biggest angles in wrestling history, bro.
Yes, and you've been some of the worst too.
hey, they were not the worst. They would have been worse if I wasn't doing it. Bro.
Probably. All right. Anything else to say about Sting?
Nope.
All right. The truth
shall
set
Cody
you
free.